Today is Thursday, May 9th, 2024. This is our quarterly meeting of the City of Tucson Deferred Compensation Management Plan Board. And I will call roll. Rolf?
Here.
You're here. Art is
here.
Aaron?
Here.
Here for Vivian. Elsa's on vacation. Jason?
Here. Good morning.
Good morning. Dennis, I'm here, and I don't see John's name up there, so we'll let John and the clerk sort that out. Okay. We do have a quorum. Okay. Item B, approval of the February 8th, 2024 minutes. I'll take a, someone will make a motion to approve those minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Art moves, seconded by Jason. Okay. We'll take roll on that. Rolf?
Aye.
Aye. Art?
Aye.
Got an aye. Aaron?
Aye.
Jason?
Aye.
And Dennis, aye. Approved 5-0. Okay, I understand that we want to switch up the order of the items C and D to allow Empower to go first and then Innovest to go second today. If that's okay, we can start with Jeff and his report.
I have no objections, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to share my screen here real quick.
Got it. Okay.
Please let me know if it's up there.
We can see it.
Okay, perfect. So welcome, everybody, to this meeting. And for the Empower portion of the presentation today, we're actually going to do two items. We're going to do the annual strategic partnership plan, where we do a high-level review of some of the things that were accomplished in 2023, as well as some brief updates on Empower and what we're working on for 2024 to help continue help our clients push the envelope and helping people have a successful retirement by creating their income they had while working. And then we'll get into the regular quarterly reports for the City of Tucson defined contribution plans. So I'm going to start with the strategic partnership plan here and just moving on to a quick agenda here. Just a quick review of the Tucson service team. We'll give you a quick Empower update. We'll talk about participant communications that have taken place, last year and now this year. I've brought in Ron Savageau, who's our manager of participant engagement. He's Corey's manager. He's going to be going over our advice, what we call advice 2.0. It's our new and improved structure for working with participants and capturing information from a fiduciary standpoint before we make recommendations. He'll talk about participant engagement. And then he'll turn it back over and I'll give you a little secure 2.0 update, as well as go over what we call the innovation blueprint for Empower, some of the things that we're working on from a technological standpoint, for this year and into the future. So just jumping into the service team real quick, as you can see here, I know that you guys are used to seeing, myself and Corey most often. But just as a reminder, you've got Rob as your, executive leadership, my manager. If you have any questions, concerns with the Empower service team, you've got Celeste Miller. She's our internal client service manager. She works closely with Pete and Don, administratively. If there's any questions, concerns, issues, participant situations that we need to figure out. You got Nikki Jones, your communication strategist, and then you've got Ron. But really what I want to showcase here is just collectively, as you can see here, the team has a total of 84 years of experience. And most of those years for most of us have been in the government space, uniquely, working with you all, understanding the challenges of cities, counties, governments, et cetera. And, we keep those lines of business separate so that we continue to build our expertise for the government market. Quick and Power business update. I'm just going to spend a few minutes here. I at the risk of not wanting this to sound like an Empower commercial, I think you know who we are. But just as a quick update, we are now at 82,000 plans on our platform with over 1.5 trillion in assets with over 18 million individuals on the Empower platform. Why that's important to you is we continue to grow, we continue to invest in our business. And as I think about Empower's brand, it's been about almost 10 years now since we went from Great West to Empower. And it's been almost about 5 years since the city of Tucson's been with us. I can remember 5 years ago, a lot of folks may not have known who Empower was, right? So you guys made a big decision to change Record Keepers. A lot of folks were asking the question, who is Empower? And that brand recognition today is much better than it was 5 years ago, because we continue to do a fantastic job of marketing across multiple platforms. They couldn't even name the hundreds of channels we're doing commercials on now, sponsoring golfers, sponsoring athletes. So our name is out there, and you're going to continue to see us grow in the marketplace. One thing that we're proud of is we're the fastest growing retirement provider in America. Some folks will say, oh, well, it's because you acquired MassMutual and Prudential. Well, yes, that is true. But if you actually strip those acquisitions out, we're still growing 3 times faster than the market does in terms of responding to RFPs and getting new business from advisors out in the marketplace. So that combination of acquisition and organic growth is really putting us at the forefront of the retirement space. And then next, as employees, we continue to, define and work on our culture within Empower. Again, why that's important to you is when we do our surveys, our employees, our satisfaction continues to grow, which I think our clients really like to hear, because we're going to have folks that are going to stick around for a while, folks that are going to know your plan and your nuances, so that we can continue to serve the government markets, the city of Tucson, really to the highest capability we can. And then didn't want to skip over just, in addition to the work that we do for our clients, right? Empower is very flexible on the community service and the time they give us to give back to those cities and counties and municipalities that we work for. So this is just a quick snapshot here of, what we've done as Empower employees to give back to our communities and help make, our communities better. So we've donated about $4.14 million into nonprofits. There was about 36,104 volunteer hours, which are actually PTO hours. So Empower pays us to actually go out and do that community service and gives us that time. We've worked with about 1,904 unique nonprofits in 2023 and almost 3,000 employees, I should say, were a part of these numbers here. So, proud to share that Empower is continuing to grow, but we continue to focus on our clients as well as the communities we serve. Okay, moving on to participant communications. So last year during the strategic partnership plan, we talked about our two-prong approach to marketing, really. And one was the, unique campaigns that we do for the city of Tucson, as well as our Empower communications engine. And that our goal was to shift more away from those unique campaigns, so to speak, and move to the Empower communications engine, because they would take people on a journey. They were more consistent. They were more frequent, and they got people to take more action. So just going to do a quick review of what we did last year to kind of give you an idea of the scope Empower is doing their marketing to participants. But first, on the campaigns, every year we do a My Total Retirement Free Look campaign. That's for managed accounts, as you can see there. It's a 60-day period where we do the marketing. We send 3 emails encouraging folks to try the managed accounts for 90 days. If they try it and they don't like it, they can get out with no fee. If they want to continue moving forward, then we'll continue to monitor their accounts and make the appropriate investment changes based off of their situation. So the results for 2023, we had about 96 new members come in and added AUM to the program, was about 1.4. What it doesn't split out here is this could be potentially new hires as well, too. So these aren't people strictly that have been with the city for some time and have decided to get in a managed account. It's going to be a combination of those folks as well as any new hires that came into the plan. And then moving out to October, we always do National Retirement Security Month. This year we had 3 emails go out. The messages were schedule a meeting, register your account, link your accounts. And this was all based off of the premise of us updating the website once again, and integrating the personal capital dashboard, to show folks a complete, picture of their retirement if they decided to link their accounts outside their pension and et cetera. So we had an average open rate of about 44%. Average click rate was about 1%. There was 3 meetings scheduled. I know that doesn't sound like a lot through these links through the emails. I can assure you, Corey, and speaking with her, got a lot more appointments just by people reaching out proactively from the emails and not clicking through the links. Because as we talked about, I think from the fourth quarter, Corey really had a busy November and December for Tucson, which we thought was unique, but we think that, you know, some of the marketing that we're doing and Corey getting her feet under herself again, last year, you know, really has sparked some interest in meeting with her, on a more frequent basis. And then in conjunction with that, again, we have the Empower Communications engine. These are automated emails that go to folks based off of where they're at in their working or retirement journey. We've really stepped up our efforts from 2022 to 2023, and you'll see again in 2024. But as you can see here on the left, you know, folks that are unengaged, right, have a lower savings rate than those folks who are actually engaged. And we define engaged by just logging on to your mobile app or the web or having the call center once a year. To those that are what we call Empower Dashboard users are highly engaged, right? Those folks working with Corey or going onto the website and linking their accounts, you can see is that more, as folks continue to engage with us through these ECEs, that they actually have higher savings rate and it's driving those results. So specifically for Tucson, right? And again, these are going to be some high numbers, and yes, they are for Tucson. It's not across the organization here. You could see that the overall messages that we delivered in 2023 was embarking on 64,000 emails, right? And that's up from the 26,000 we sent in 2022. 62,000 emails, up from the 25. Total post login actions went from 191 in 2022 to 837. So those are folks that are actually opening the email, logging in, and taking action in regards to whatever the message may have been. And you can see some of those messages there on the right-hand side. Now you say, Jeff, geez, that's a lot of emails for our participants. What are you guys doing? Well, if you do any high-level research on marketing, right, folks get about 4,000 impressions a day when it comes to marketing, whether you're driving down the freeway or you're getting an email or you're listening to Pandora, your music without paying for it, and you have to listen to the ads, right? So we know that it takes about 10 impressions on a particular message for folks to take action. So if you actually break this number down of about 62,000 emails across the roughly 4,000 participants you have within your plan, folks are getting on average anywhere from about 10 to 13 emails annually. So again, knowing that it takes about 10 impressions, we want to be consistent, but be mindful of not overloading folks as well, getting them to take action. And then this last one here is just a quick little rundown of some of the open rates for the emails. We're able to break it down by generation, income, years of service, and balance. based off of your participant demographic. Why that's important is we want to make sure that all the messages that we're delivering to your folks are actually resonating and people are opening them, right? If something's not working, we can kick it out or tweak it, try something new through research to try and keep those people engaged. So as you can see here, again, it doesn't sound like a lot, anywhere from 1 to 2% in terms of, you know, full engagement. But I can assure you in a marketing terms, that's actually a lot for a lot of engagement for the number of messages that folks receive each day. Okay, going to turn it over to Ron real quick to talk about advice 2.0. I know Corey's here too, so if we need her help to answer any questions specifically to how she's working with participants, we can bring her in. But Ron, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Jeff. Good morning, everyone. And absolutely, if we have questions as we go along, feel free to raise them up. I appreciate your time. And I'm just going to spend a few minutes talking about a couple of subjects. One is take a little deeper dive into how we are enhancing our engagement with your participants in the plan. And then also talk a little bit about the evolution of our conversation framework. And we sort of affectionately call this advice 2.0. So what have we done to deepen that conversation framework so that we can better engage with participants? As you heard Jeff mention, we're really trying to find moments that matter in our marketing and in our Empower communications engine. Corey's goals are driven by that same score. We're trying to have her meetings enhance those conversations to drive action. And we measure them through what we call positive participant actions. Things like enrolling in the plan or increasing their savings, rolling money into the plan, or simply just better diversifying their portfolio. We know those are ways that they're going to improve their overall retirement score. In the Advice 2.0 framework, what we've changed about that is really that last piece, the allocation. Try to drive more specific, more detailed recommendations on portfolios. And the next slide will show you what that looks like in a little bit greater detail. We're trying to maintain our duty of care for the regulatory environment. Jeff will go over some Secure 2.0 updates, really just up to and including a finalization of part of the fiduciary rule. But some of our conversation changes have been a result of the ongoing evolution of the legal and regulatory environment. The Securities and Exchange Commission, Department of Labor fiduciary rule. Our goal in making some of these changes is to satisfy and exceed regulation best interest. While that's not necessary for government, non-ERISA plans, Empower has taken it upon themselves to be proactive and have that conversation framework be aligned across the organization and really meet the evolving needs of the regulatory environment. And we're doing that. The next slide will show you how we're delivering enhancement on that advice. We want to deliver and execute on point-in-time advice for participants where appropriate. And we've integrated our best interest profile tool into Corey's experience to be able to do exactly that. We're going to provide more specific recommendations and also how to implement those strategies, up to and including strategies that Corey can now implement directly. And then we also have a memorialization process in that we send a follow-up to your participants with the result of what those meetings are. So they know, hey, here's the changes we're looking to make. Here's the time frame that we're doing that in. So that ongoing integrated documentation is part of the process. Next slide is going to show you what that conversation framework looks like. We call it a retirement readiness review. You've likely heard that before in the past from Jeff and Corey. So this conversation flow is probably familiar to you. And what we want to do is set the table for proper conversation when Corey is taking that more holistic retirement readiness review to provide an assessment of probability of success in retirement. So as you go from left to right, setting the agenda, account reviews and goals and retirement assessment, those are all things that we've had in place for many years. We continue to do those things well. But really where that change and evolution in the conversation is in that last one. So review analysis and looking at next steps. In the past, we've had options available to your participants. Corey's gone over those and help them make a decision on what might be the best next step. And that's where you see in that framework where we have a divergence here. That would have been in the red current education flow. What we've evolved this into is our new advice flow is actually transitioning to a new program, the Best Interest Profile Tool, to provide a specific guided fiduciary recommendation. And the guided part to me is important, as is the specific. With specific, we can tell them, here is, based on everything we know about you, the best possible outcome to get you to achieving the retirement goal that you have in mind and having your probability of success increase. And then the guided portion of that is we put guardrails around that conversation framework. We think it's important in the best interest environment that we know those outcomes are not influenced by objective opinions. Corey doesn't really have the ability to objectively add to the conversation, to put her own opinion into the recommendation. We provide a very curated approach to it. In the next slide, I'll show you what those outcomes will look like. So with our best interest profile tool, and I'll go through in the next two or three slides, a little bit of a look and example of what that profile tool looks like. But the results are up here. There's four options that any one of your plan participants can have as regard to the outcomes from the engagement. Point in time advice. This is for somebody that says, hey, I do want to manage my own investments, but I probably need a little help with that. This is a very new evolution in the conversation and that Corey has the ability to provide to them a specific portfolio based on the conversation they had and implement that on a one-time basis. That means instant asset allocation for diversified portfolio based on their time and risk tolerance. We'll implement that. There's no cost to do that. And they can follow up with Corey whenever they want. Corey will normally encourage an annual account review or retirement readiness review. Target date fund. Be somebody that's not really interested in managing their own investments, does need help, but maybe has a more simplistic financial goal. And in that scenario, we know target date strategies work well. They're instantly diversified, cost-effective portfolio based on a target retirement age in the future. And we can make changes to that portfolio anytime they're engaged as well. Third option is managed account. This is for somebody that really doesn't have interest or time in building their own portfolio and due to age or complexity of financial situation, wants someone else to take care of it for them. That's My Total Retirement. You heard Jeff talk a little bit about the campaigns around that. We have that as a service as well. And then the last one is do it yourself, which has always been an option, right? They want to manage their own portfolio and they don't need help with their investments. That's always a continued outcome for the plan. The next slide is going to give you an example of what a suitability will look like. We go through a specific questionnaire for all participants, regardless of age or profile, to make sure that we understand their current situation so that we can make a recommendation that's suitable for them. The next slide will show you a target date fund solution. And there's a lot of information. This is a bit of a busy slide here, but those are the types of questions that Corey is going to ask during this engagement. And what you can see highlighted here in red is this particular participant has a simpler investment conversation than their peer group. My eyes are failing me now. And then the other one, Mark, no, is are they willing to pay a fee for an additional portfolio? So because they've answered simpler and no, the recommendation is going to be to invest in a target date fund, which is appropriate in most cases. On the next slide, I'll give you an example of what point and time advice might look like. And here's the change. Same two boxes, but in this scenario, you see somebody's checked it out. I think I have a more complicated potential portfolio than my peer group, but I also don't want to pay an additional fee for that advice or that extra cost. And in this scenario, we're recommending to invest in a lineup that's best suited for you at this time, right? The real difference here is that's going to be a one-time snapshot. So it is incumbent upon your plan participants to reach back out and engage with Corey to make future adjustments to that portfolio. So speaking of engagement, let's talk. Actually, let me pause. Does anybody have any questions on that conversation change or the advice 2.0 framework?
Hey, Ron, this is Art. Have people expressed, participants, have they expressed any feedback or have they noticed a difference? I mean, I guess that's probably more for Corey than anything. I suspect they maybe have not noticed a difference unless they've met with Corey multiple times to know the difference. But are you guys getting any feedback on that?
Yeah, I would say on a national level, we definitely are. We can see that anytime that we're engaging the best interest profile tool across our plan universe, we are driving action. In every engagement that we've measured year to date, 70% of those meetings result in participants taking an action on their portfolio. And that's a great number. That's a lot of feedback on improving the process and trying to build a portfolio that provides them with a better future. So nationally, 100%, we are seeing positive feedback in that regard and driving better participant outcomes. Corey, any thoughts on Tucson specific?
Yeah, I would say that we get a lot of positive feedback, especially from those individuals, you're right, Art, that have met multiple times, where maybe last year they engaged and they didn't want to pay a fee, but target date funds weren't necessarily the right solution for them. So we weren't able to really help them diversify into a portfolio that was appropriate for them. And so for those individuals that, you know, they fit that criteria, they're now able to have a solution where we're able to help them to diversify. And there's great feedback, I would say, that we're getting from that, specifically from Tucson participants.
That's good to hear. Jeff, remind me, this was a part of board action that we took. I don't know if it was last year or could have been the year before, but the board had to effectively opt in to some of these services that are being offered through this different channel, correct?
No, not necessarily. So this is a model that we employ nationwide. What the city had opted into was, I think, having like our retirement solutions group, right, which is our call center folks being able to transition from that education over to the advice, right?
Okay.
Not just including, you know, investments or savings, but talking about rollovers, right? Keeping money in the plan versus what happens if you roll it out, what are the consequences, et cetera. So those decisions were more geared towards allowing the call center to have those fiduciary conversations.
Yeah, and Art, I'd add to that, the piece that is important to Corey is that online advice module. That was part of that package that you're thinking of. And we've now enabled our retirement plan advisors to utilize it to implement directly.
Got it. I just wanted to tie back because I remember the board taking action on it. So we can tie that back to, at least tangentially some of the decisions the board has made.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Art, and kind of going back to this process, I think what's most important here is, you know, Corey said we've got a lot of good feedback from participants, but it used to be like if somebody wanted to build their own portfolio, right, couldn't really give them that recommendation, and then they'd have to go out onto the website and do it their own. Well, through this point in time advice, Corey's actually gets to make the recommendation. If the participant wants to say yes to it, then it's a couple clicks of a button away and Corey's making that change for them. So we're removing the friction of them having to go online and, you know, choose the five or six different funds that are being recommended. So she gets to implement it right then and there. And I think that's where a lot of the positive feedback comes, is because we've removed that friction. We can get it done and that person walks out. They've got nothing else to do until they want to come back and review their account with Corey.
Got it. Thank you.
And in that scenario, it gives them a point to make certain that they do schedule an additional appointment with Corey, which is great. It creates that further conversation and development of retirement outcomes. Any other questions on that conversation change? All right, let's cover quickly just participant engagement. These next few slides have looked familiar to you from past years. But one of the things that we do in engaging with your population is trying to figure out where we can improve outcomes for those individuals that are most at risk. And up on the slide here, we're going to talk about two different groups that we've identified as being at risk. So in the Empower Communications Engine campaigns that you heard Jeff mention, we want to have some more targeted approaches. And in addition, we actually have Corey have proactive outreach on these target areas to make sure. We don't want to make assumptions that there's something awry here, but there's potential for something in their portfolio to not be quite right. And that's where we really want to target these through outreach. And Corey does that as part of her weekly operations today. In this particular group we're talking about, we're going to call equity exposure. So do-it-yourself participants. So these are folks that aren't necessarily engaged with a program that helps with their investments or have connected with Corey in the recent past. There's 1,368 of them in your plan. 30% of those folks we would consider to have a high equity exposure relative to their age. Again, there might be mitigating circumstances for why that is. We just want to identify, check in, and make sure that they are aware of them and or on track. On the right-hand side, you'll see the number of participants with that high equity exposure. That's 214 in 50 to 59, 108 in 60 to 67, and then 90 over 67. So those numbers really aren't too bad. But what I would call out here is that it's a 1.1% increase since the end of 2022. Now, we could say a lot of that might have to do with market performance in 23. Fair. But we just want to make sure that these people engage with their dashboard, that they are prepared for retirement, and that they're improving their outcome. The next slide will go over the opposite here, and these are participants with low equity exposure. We've actually adjusted this framework a bit in terms of how we identify those folks. Essentially today, it is anybody with 10% or less of their balance exposed to equities. We also know that that's a problem. There are 1,804 do-it-yourself participants in that group, and almost 35% of them have 10% or less. This to me is a little bit more of an alarming number. However, definitely an improvement over 2022. So there's a 0.8% decrease in that percentage of participants. And on the right-hand side, you can see those columns pretty much probably as expected, right? So the greatest number of those participants are over 67 years of age. They might be using the fixed account and are doing so intentionally. But we do want to make sure that we check in with these folks, that they know what their goals are throughout their retirement, which hopefully will be a long retirement, and address the potential for inflation risk or purchasing power risk. Right? Every investment, regardless of whether it's aggressive, equity-based, or conservative fixed income, has a risk. And oftentimes, there's a perception of safety when it relates to the fixed account or stable value assets. In this scenario, we want to make sure that they realize that their purchasing power might actually be declining over time. As you know, inflation has been in the headlines. Certainly, it's been higher in the near term than it has been over the past 25 years. So we want to make sure that Corey's having those conversations with these key target demographics. And the next slide will show you.
Hey, Ron, really. Ron, before you move off, can you go back two slides?
Yeah.
So this slide here, how is 50 a standard benchmark that you guys use? I mean, why age 50, right? Is that just the national standard? Is that a best practice?
Good question. And yes, the short answer is yes. That's just a benchmark age that we've determined for, we'll say getting closer to the end of their career. You know, across the enterprise, it might be older, but in government plans, certainly it's a decent benchmark. It is the age at which they can start doing catch up contributions as well.
Yeah. I wonder how that looks specific. I mean, is this is for the city specific, right? 1368 that are over 50.
Correct. Do it yourself, folks. So people right. That we have identified and not in the target date fund or managed portfolio.
Yeah, that does seem like a high number.
And again, okay. It might be intentional, right? Many of these people have a thoughtful do-it-yourself approach, but there's certainly folks that can use some help.
Yeah, I just 50 seems like a low number to me. Especially as I think about it, right? Because I'm closer to that number than I care to admit. But I know that we have a lot of, public service folks that may be a part of our plan that can retire at 50 or 55, depending on, you know, their age of service or years of service. So I understand why we're targeting that number, but as I look at it from my perspective, you know, I, 5-6 years from now, 7 years from now, I'm not going to really divulge the number, but I'm not going to look to change anything different in my particular plan when I hit that number, because I'll still have, you know, 20 years to go. So, that was just why I was asking.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a fair assessment, right? We run most of our models and Corey's plans on an expected life expectancy of 92. So we hope that everybody's going to live a very long retirement. But in terms of identifying an age, we'd rather skew younger,
right?
So we still have time, right? Because we know market events can impact this in a positive or negative way in a shorter period of time. And we want to make sure that we can address that so that they still have time to adjust goals if need be.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. And Art, let's remember there's a breakdown of that 1,368, right? So those people are over 50, but we're looking at these 412 participants who still have a 75% or more in equities, right? So in your case, yes, you may, you know, keep that because you know you're going to, you know, hopefully live a long life and stay aggressive. But for some folks, again, they may have outside accounts or situations where they're just taking on way too much risk and they don't need to, and we need to dial it back more. So that population is a little smaller than the 1368.
Got it. Thank you.
Let's jump back ahead a couple of slides there. This is the slide I'd love to point out is very busy. There's a lot of information up here. We try to orient you a bit to this and just give you a quick idea. This is just a complement of the previous two conversations here. In the middle, that black line with the blue around it surrounding this, what we identified as a glide path. So this is that, I'll call it optimal strategy for the average investor based on their age. And it's showing you a gradual decline in equity. You can see that equity percentage on the left-hand column and then age across the bottom. Each one of those green or blue dots that you see is an individual participant in the City of Tucson plan. And what we're really focused on is those two red checked boxes, right? Inflation risk at the bottom, equity risk at the top. We just identified what those are. But what we really want to do is have Corey focused on these two groups with that targeted outreach to try to get them back within 10 to 20% of that glide path strategy. Some of these look fairly large, right? You can see, as you get older in age, especially to me, the thing that jumps out is that inflation risk for people that are 60, well, let's see, 62 and up, right? There's a lot of big diamonds down there. Those are the type of people we want to connect with, make sure that they have an appropriate asset allocation for what they're looking to do for the remainder of their retirement. Again, most people are going to live a very long retirement. Some of them in your plan might actually live longer in retirement than they did working. And we just want to make sure that they are prepared for that. Any questions on this slide or any of the topics I covered? I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Ron. All right, going to jump into a quick little Secure 2.0 update. Cassie, you may be perking your ears up here on this particular subject here, trying to figure out what Empower is trying to do here. But really, I just want to start at a high level by saying Empower remains focused on a lot of the Secure 2.0 provisions. The number fluctuates, but I hear anywhere that Empower is spending anywhere from $55 to $65 million from the time Secure 2.0 comes out all the way to some of the last provisions that are going to happen in the next couple of years to get these implemented into the plans for our clients. So just want to, you know, share with you that we remain focused and we're going to spend the money to get them implemented in a timely manner, assuming we get the guidance we need in time to make some of these provisions effective. But just doing a quick 2023 recap, I think some of the biggest ones here were some of the mandatory provisions, right? And those were around required minimum distributions. We had the clarification on the qualified birth and adoption three-year repayment. So we've been able to switch those rules around. The 10% penalty waiver for certain state and local correction employees and public safety military correction officers was another 2023 deliverable. And then specifically to government on the right-hand side there, we had the elimination of the first of the month rule for the 457s. And then, you know, that's really it at a high level for 2023. Now the roadmap, this is where it gets a little interesting, because again, as I said, there's some more guidance that we need on some things and it's starting to slowly trickle out. But in, you can see 2024 and in 2025 plus, getting ready to, you know, roll out the domestic abuse provisions, which, will be implemented into the plan here in May, federal disaster distributions in August, terminally ill distributions in August. And then the public safety officers distribution to pay healthcare premiums in August. So we have the ability to do that now, but our system still is programmed to send the check to the insurance company directly. By August, we'll have that switched around so that if a participant, public safety officer wants to have that check sent to themselves before they forward it on to the insurance, it reduces a little bit of red tape. We'll have that ability in August. And then, moving into 2024 for things that are going to be effective for 2025, I think the big one here is the higher catch-up ages for 60 through 63. So right now we've got 50 plus catch-up. You know, beginning in 2025, there's going to be these additional age brackets where they can save even more if you're not doing special catch-up by that age. So we'll have the 60, the 61, the 62, and the 63 bracket. And then I think the big one that's on everybody's mind in 2025, getting ready for 2026 rollout, is the Roth catch-up, right, where, you know, the government said that any 50 plus, which I think will include the higher catch-up ages of 60 and 63, well, being implemented in 2025, will have to be subject to taxes and put into the plan via Roth. Now, there's still some clarification because we know not all government employees are subject to FICA taxes, which this is based off of, with the $145,000 for those folks that have to put it into Roth. But these are just some of the things that we're going to continue to focus on. We're probably going to have a lot more information at the next meeting on some optional provisions and the rollout of some of these mandatory ones going into 2025. So just wanted to give you a brief update there. Any questions there? All right. Lastly, for the partnership plan, moving into what we call and empower the innovation blueprint, right? So this is, you've heard about all the things that we've done to, you know, have a better participant experience on the web and the mobile, have a better participant experience when they're working with Corey, right? But we're not going to rest on our laurels. We're always continuing to push the envelope. And we have this innovation blueprint to kind of showcase what we're working on to continue to improve. But wanted to start with how we come up with some of these ideas, right? This isn't empower in a room with a few leadership folks saying, hey, I think it'd be nice if we do this. I think it's nice if we do that. We really come about it from a different perspectives. I think the first thing is, I'm hearing some feedback. We get everybody to mute. Thanks. Okay, that's better. So we start always with the voice of the customer, right? When we're getting feedback from the call center or from plan sponsors and committees such as yourselves, right? We don't just say, okay, yeah, that's something might we do. We actually write it down. We actually submit it. People take a look at it. If it's a viable option, we're going to put it in line to get it built. So it starts with our customer, really. And also, we've got a client advisory boards, right, where we invite folks across different industries, 401k, 457, right? What are our challenges? What can we do better? And also we rely on, you know, our employees, right? We're the boots on the ground. And when we see challenges with our plans and we think that there could be improvements, right? We get to turn those same ideas in and we know that they get vetted, you know, through the empower process. So just kind of give you an idea of how we come up with some of the roadmap items you'll see here shortly. One of the big topics that is being brought up more and more, and not only in the media, but also with our plan sponsors, is AI, right? So some plan sponsors have asked us, how are we going to use AI? We're concerned about AI. What's happening here? So on this top line here, you can just see the different definitions of what AI can actually be. You know, right now we're using artificial intelligence and machine learning at this point, right, to do some call fraud detection to help us with our service chatbot for those folks that like to, you know, put in a question, how do I get a loan on the website, et cetera. And we're also using it for our customer care center voice response system. In the future, I think the important point here is we're not going to go crazy with AI. We're not going to, you know, robotize everything and get rid of people. But I think where it's going to help us is we're going to start to be able to analyze calls from participants, right? So the recordings of those calls, AI will actually go through and pick up on keywords so we can identify trends, right? Hey, we have to have more people experts in this because there are folks calling, right, about a particular subject. So that's how we're going to use AI. Next best action for customer service. So again, those folks that are in the call center, they're going to follow a flow. AI is going to actually point these people in the right direction in terms of, hey, make sure you go over this, make sure you do that, right? It's going to be a really defined process that the AI is going to build for us. But I think the biggest one, and this comes to back to Secure 2.0, is it's going to help us write code, right? So that's what we spend tens of thousands of man hours every year building Secure 2.0, building out the website. It takes a lot of manpower, takes a lot of money. AI is going to be able to help us streamline that process by, you know, recommending code as a coder is actually writing in real time, right? So, hey, you're trying to do this. I think the next best action for code is going to be this, and it's going to give that programmer an option to say, oh, yep, that's the code that I need. Copy and paste, boom, I'm saving time. And we can get through things a little bit quicker in terms of that code creation. So some good stuff there on AI. The last two slides, a lot of information. I'll let you read this on your own time on some of the things that we're doing from a digital, mobile, cybersecurity standpoint. But I just think that, as you can see here, we've got a pretty comprehensive list of the things that we want to accomplish to improve our technology and our experience, not only from a plan sponsor side, but also participant side. And you can see some of these things listed out here. In terms of, I think going back to what I've been saying a lot is removing friction in working with Empower, whether it's administratively or over the phone or working with Corey, et cetera. And that's it for the partnership plan. Anybody have any questions on any topic?
No question, just a comment. Thanks. I appreciate that update. That's Empower's doing a lot of things behind the scenes. So I appreciate the update from the board perspective.
Yeah, I understand as a committee that you don't get to hear about them all the time. That's why we do this once a year. You know, so many things trickle out. It's hard to keep up with them. But just doing a review of this, I think, keeps you guys abreast of everything that we're trying to do. All right, let's jump into the plans for the first quarter. All three plans combined are about $314.8 million first quarter. Had a little bit of a bump, obviously, but we're doing better over the last couple of weeks. So the plans still are above the $300 million threshold. Happy to report. And in terms of participants with a balance, we had a nice little increase from the end of the year up until the end of March. So we went from 4,129 participants to 4,190. Continuing to see that number grow here into the second quarter as well. Corey's shaking her head. I know from my conversations with her, she's been extremely busy with enrollments and appointments and, you know, couldn't be happier with how busy she is. We wish you could duplicate her across the nation, but we'll do our best to keep her all to ourselves here at Tucson, working with your participants. Moving into just the executive summary. So again, this is for folks that do have all three plans. The average account balances are at 75,133. Gonna jump specifically into the 457. At the end of the first quarter, about 308.1 million. We had 4,141 participants. Lifetime income score continues to be a bright spot for Tucson, right? Your median is a 65, surpassing our benchmark of about 61. Again, this is, I think, over the 140 or maybe 150 plan, 457 plans we have on our platform that are between 50 and 500 million. So you're doing well compared to your peers there. Average account balance for the 457 is about 74,410. Moving on to the investment strategy utilization, this online advice section here is one that I'm going to be keeping an eye on. Ron just talked about that point in time advice, right? Having that extra option that we've had starting in really just in December. So we've just got a few months under our belt, but hopefully we continue to see that number grow. Again, just another arrow in the quiver for folks to either do managed accounts, take the online advice, take the target date. You've got the risk based strategy, right? Getting more of those folks out of the do-it-yourself strategy and helping them get diversified across the board. Cash flow for the plan, as you can see here for the first quarter, we started at $294 million. We had about $3.9 million come in contributions, about $6.7 come out in the first quarter. Again, that's typical for the first quarter. We've had a lot of retirements at the end of the year. Termination dates or retirement dates hit our system. What's the first thing that people want to do? They want to get access to their money, take some money out, you know, potentially pay off some bills, get themselves at a good baseline for their retirement. Fees were at $99,000. Loans issued almost $300,000. Loan payments were about $315,000. And then we see that nice strong number of the change in value of about 16.2 to the positive for the $308 million. Contribution rates. So I like this slide because this is a good combination of Corey working with participants and folks taking action from ECEs or working with the website, right? We take a look at each one of these categories across the board, and we can see that even though we have more folks coming into the plan and contributing, right, we see a lot of our categories growing, right, in terms of percentages, right? So 1-2% staying relatively flat, right? But where we really see some traction, where we want to see the traction, as you can see, you know, from 3% on, give or take with a few, but 3%, we went from 209 to 225. 4% was flat. 5%, we had an extra 10 people. 6%, right? Nice jump of 31 folks in that category. 7, we had 4. 8, we had 3. A little bit of a reduction in 9, but you know, are those the folks that went from 10 to 11? Because you can see here we had some nice contribution increases there from 10 to 11% in both those categories. So, again, just a testament to the group and the communications that we're doing to have people continue to save more as they progress throughout their careers. And we're seeing more of those contributions come into plan. Money type by utilization. We've got 1,909 doing before tax. We've got 350 doing Roth only, right, which is fantastic. And then we've got about 154 participants that are doing multiple types. What's fantastic to see is that as Roth becomes more prevalent in the Tucson plan, we can see that those folks that are utilizing Roth and multiple types, right, tend to have a little bit of a younger age than those folks that just had the pre-tax for all those years. But they're actually getting the higher median lifetime income scores, right? Because they're going to have some of this tax-free benefit in retirement. We talked about contributions. I'm going to skip over that. Just going to do a quick rundown on distribution here. So again, in the first quarter, we saw that about 6.7 million come out. These are all the different reasons that funds came out. We had 5.7 million in separation of service or retirement. RMDs always plays a big role in the beginning of the year. We had in-service. This might be that age 59 and a half for folks taking money out that are still working. Hardship had a nice low number. Service credits, we had a couple of purchases there. We had some quadros. We had some payments due to death. And that's the total for the 6.7 million. I dug a little bit deeper into the details. I didn't see any distributions that really alarmed me for a first quarter. So I think everything is looking pretty good there. Loans, I'm just going to jump to page 16, right? And the one thing that jumped out to me for the first quarter was this high number of loans in January here. But if you actually take a look what happened in February and March, kind of leveled off again. And if you kind of take the averages for the years we've seen for the city of Tucson, it remains relatively consistent. Inflation obviously has been a tough deal for everybody. I know I necessarily don't like going to Costco anymore. It used to be one of my favorite places, but everything is 10 times more and I end up walking out with things I didn't need. And all of a sudden it's spending way too much than I wanted to. California here, particularly our gas prices are high. Additionally, our minimum wage went up for fast food workers. So I am being hit on all fronts here when I'm taking the kids to Chick-fil-A. In-N-Out, thankfully, had already is paying their employees well. So that's not hurting me too much. But again, where I'm tying this back into is that we know that folks are feeling the pinch when it comes to inflation and, you know, loans is one of the places that they're going to go get access to their funds to help carry them over until hopefully rates come down, inflation comes down.
Hey, Jeff, I'll just note here. It's going to be curious to see how not only the loans, are impacted, but also the inflow of contributions over the course of the next 12 months. You know, the city is probably not alone with in other cities where we're facing a budget shortfall, in 25. And while the recommended budget will be structurally balanced, I do not believe it's going to include at this point any, increases in wages. Depending on what participants do with their health insurance, they're likely going to see health insurance increases in their plans. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that, to that contribution level over the course of the next 12 months as we get into 25 and people feel that pinch even more when, their take home pay is impacted by some of the actions that the city has taken, in conjunction with the budget this year.
Yeah. Well, agreed. I want to thank you for that insight. Obviously, we've got the data here on that contribution slide to see what people are doing. We'll be able to see if it's fluctuating up and down. We can see if more loans are coming out, et cetera. And then obviously we've got CORE as these things start to play out. You know, part of her role is not only to help people with retirement, but I think she's part therapist. When it comes to some of these things, right, she gets to hear what's going on, and she can relay that information back to us as well, too. So thank you for that heads up, because now it's on our radar and we can be aware of it.
Jeff, this is Paul. Quick question on that $6 million plus of disbursements.
Yeah.
Do you see any trends on the rollover side going towards, you know, Schwab or Fidelity or a local broker, that type of thing?
Good question. I don't know what it is, and I can't pinpoint it, Paul, but not just with Tucson, but even my plans in Nevada and in California that I cover, Schwab for like the last year has been doing something to, I don't know, gather assets. And I don't know if it's just been a marketing spree, more awareness, more advisors, et cetera. I'm seeing on every single report, they seem to be ticking up across the board. So it's interesting to see. And I think for specifically for the city of Tucson, we know we've got some folks that are out there, you know, that work with safety specifically. So they do get their hands on those assets. But yeah, I would say the one thing that does stick out, you know, we're seeing a number of players across the board, Paul, when you have a plan this size, right? You have your Fidelities, right? But we're seeing like onesie, twosies, whatever, your Merrill Lynches of the world. But it's really Schwab that seems to be jumping into those, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 rollovers, right? So I can't put my finger on how, other than maybe they're marketing, they're being aggressive, they've cut fees on something, et cetera. That's all I can say at this point.
No, good. Thank you. Appreciate it, Jeff.
Yep. Ralph, you got your hand up?
Yeah, Jeff, I know that in the last year, Schwab is finalizing their takeover of TD Ameritrade. So that could be causing a more consolidation of funds into Schwab, which would cause people perhaps to transfer.
Yeah, there's that. So actually on the Empower platform, right, you guys on Tucson, you have a self-directed brokerage. It's actually an Empower self-directed brokerage vehicle. But before we had our own product, we used TD Ameritrade and Schwab as the self-directed brokerage. So we've been through that transition. I think it happened like Labor Day of last year where TD Ameritrade went to Scott. The actual movement went to Schwab. So you make a good point there is that, you know, folks are now more aware of who Schwab is because of maybe some money movement across platforms. And then now Schwab is saying, okay, you know, let's use this as an opportunity to gather assets as we bring TD Ameritrade over. So that makes sense as a possible scenario for sure. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to jump over just to the two 401As real quick in the interest of time. First 401A, about $5.3 million. We've got 44 folks in that. And then when we jump to the 401A executives, that has stayed flat as well. We've got about 1.3 million almost with five folks within the plan. I know we don't spend too much time here, but I do know that when Corey runs into these folks that have, you know, the 457 and the 401A, right, if we're taking the opportunity to diversify their portfolio in the 457, we're also doing it in the 401A. So we're seeing a lot of congruity there for those folks as well, too. So, again, we're not separating the plans in silos. We want them to work together and have the same investment strategy if we can across the board. All right. That's it for the Empower update. If anybody has any other questions or comments, I'm open. Otherwise, I'll turn it back over to Mr. Chair for the next item.
All right, Jeff, thank you. That was quite a bit of information. My head is overflowing.
Well, good thing, Dennis, is we only do that once a year.
Yeah, no, that's good stuff. Thank you. Okay, we will turn it over to Innovest for their portion.
Great. Mr. Chair, thank you. I will kick us off and give Gordon a chance to share our screen. Mr. Chairman, you look great, by the way, so glad to have you back.
Thank you.
Gord, if we could just start on page two. So just I'll begin by providing a little bit of an update on, you know, some of the key events that happened in our shop in the first quarter of 24. So, you know, we continue to stay relevant on the professional side with events and conferences. We continue to add new folks and add partners. And similar to Empower, we also stay active on the charitable side. There was one particular accolade there on the bottom that we'd like to call out. And we received an Eddy Award along with our client, Colorado State. And Gordon was heavily, heavily involved with this. And, you know, he's got social media pictures of him receiving this award along with the folks at Colorado State. But pension and investments, you know, arguably the, you know, most credible professional publication in our business, gave Colorado State and Innovest the Eddy Award for participant communication on a really, really complicated transition. So we're really, really proud of that. And the last thing I'd like to share with regards to first quarter, we actually rolled out our newest Arizona client here in Arizona. So that was the city of Goodyear. I won't spend any time here on pages three and four, but pages three and four really document the major decisions that this committee has made. So it's hard to believe that we started this in 2019. I think as I look at people on this call, Art, Dennis, and Cassie, I think are the three people that were all involved in this process in the beginning of 2019. But as changes occur to the committee and people come and go and there's elections, it's just a great piece from a practical standpoint for any new members to see the major decisions. But more importantly, you know, this serves as a fiduciary paper trail to show the documented decisions that this committee's made. So for quarterly topics and trends, What we really want to do for this quarter is just focus a little bit on menu design. And I think it makes a lot of sense given some of the new members to provide some context, right? And when we go back to pre-Innovest, so 2018, 2019, the record keeper was Mission Square. At the time, they were ICMA. There were 40-some-odd investment choices. They were all proprietary investment options. There wasn't an IPS. There was some revenue share. There were a lot of categories, equity styles that had duplication. So it was a little bit confusing for participants. You know, typically when you have a lot of choices, there's a direct correlation between having more choice and then a decrease in participation. And there's also some consideration and risk from the plan sponsor and a fiduciary level. You know, the trend is to go to less options. And one of the big concerns, you know, was kind of the oversight of the investment options that was really being done by Mission Square, ICMA at the time. So just if you look at the bottom of the page and look at the tiers, you know, kind of the menu design that we've had since Innovest took over is really broken up into tiers. And the next page will also illustrate that. But tier one is really the target date funds. And Ron had mentioned target date funds earlier. And that's really meant for a participant that wants to have somebody do it for them and then put it on autopilot. When we had that discussion in 2019, it really came down to, we definitely want to have, the target date conversation came down to passive versus active. It was Vanguard on the passive side, American Funds on the active side, and ultimately the committee selected American Funds. Tier two is really meant for the participants that want to self-direct. So these are your prototypical Morningstar style boxes. So kind of on that top right-hand side in the middle, large cap growth, that's where large cap blue chip companies exist. And what Apple would have been 30 years ago would have resided in that small cap growth section. So, you know, in the core category, we believe in having passive investment options with active on the value and the growth side. So really meant for participants that want to self-direct. And then also we have the brokerage account, as Jeff alluded to earlier, for participants that want more choice outside of the investment options that are being monitored. We have that self-directed brokerage account. If we were to graph this of what this looked like in 2019 with the Mission Square lineup, you'd have a lot of these categories have more than just one fund. So the menu design today is one fund per equity style, essentially eliminating all of the duplication. The next page is interesting. You know, Troy and I, who's not here, we did the City of North Las Vegas meeting on Monday, and we had a breakfast with a committee member, and he was talking about sector funds. So his question was highly appropriate for the timing of their committee meeting. But we get asked all the time about sector funds and specialty funds. And, you know, there are considerations for all of you. From the Innovest perspective, we believe that sector funds, specialty funds pose risk because of the high level of concentration. When you look at the menu design, you've got REITs, you've got energy, you've got high yield, you've got emerging markets that are already allocated to a large portions of the funds that are being invested or that are being offered. And the menu is really meant to cover a wide range of investors and not a small subset. You have the brokerage account that's in place. So as a practical standpoint, if you've got a participant that's asking about sector funds or specialty funds, then we think that the brokerage account is a great place for them to go, and they won't be limited to just one sector fund or specialty fund. They'll have all of the options that are made available inside of that brokerage account. Before I move on, any questions as far as quarterly topics and trends?
Hey, Paul, this is Art. I do have one question, not necessarily about anything specific that you talked about, but I've received a maybe more than one complaint about the fun lineup that the city has contained within our plan. I'm not suggesting we do anything about that, but I guess my question is more about education, about how often we do it. Is it worth putting together some education or a flyer every so often to remind participants that these investments are reviewed on a quarterly basis by not only the board, but our consultant that is responsible for this? I don't know that we've done that specifically outside of the transitions that we've had from the three funds that you mentioned earlier. And so I guess I'll pose that more to you and throw it out there broadly to the board. I don't want to overreact for one or two participants that may be unsatisfied with what we have in our plan, but it did spur some thinking that maybe we do need to do some more frequent communication about our review, our being the board, and then Innovest in conjunction with the board, you know, that we do this and we are monitoring these funds, as demonstrated by the three transitions. So I'll pause there, turn it over to you, Paul, and then get some feedback from the board.
Yeah, I mean, I'll provide my response, and I'd love to have Gordon jump in, but I think even if it's just one participant out of whatever, the 4,000 folks that work there, you know, we should probably as a committee do a better job of being proactive in just providing, you know, maybe it's a once a year update, participant communication, just telling participants, here are the good things that we're doing. Here are some of the, I mean, it probably makes sense from a practical standpoint to tell who the new committee members are. But I think, yeah, absolutely. And Gordon's going to go through the scorecard here in a little bit. You know, and it's pretty minor. So yeah, I think that's a good point. We should probably, between the committee, Innovest, and Empower, think about putting together some type of communication. Anyway, maybe it's annual, it's just talking about the great things that that this committee is doing. Board, what are your thoughts?
No, I'd absolutely agree. I think getting something out in front of participants, reminding them that there is a board watching over the plan is certainly helps their confidence in the plan. And we would say anytime we've seen that kind of communication generally go out, and it usually is around a fund change, there's appreciation by those plan participants that somebody really is watching out for them. So, no, I think, Art, that's a great idea.
You know, maybe in conjunction with National Save for Retirement Month might be a good time to put that flyer or throw that information out there to people, because it seems like October is the time of year that we do the outreach and more people will be receptive to a message that comes with all the other retirement messages at that point. Just a suggestion as far as timing.
No, that's a good suggestion. Other board members' thoughts?
Art, I'm not a board member, but just throwing my ideas out here. I want you guys to be aware that you've always got your custom website to display any type of materials you want to link to there. We can also, if there's a one or two pager that you want to include in a statement, we'll call it a statement stuffer in addition to their normal statement, we can put it in there. So you've got a number of different options to get this out to your participants.
Thanks, Jeff.
Okay. I'll continue on. You can go to page 8, Gord. So all of you have seen this multiple times. This is simply your blueprint. All of the plan design characteristics on the left-hand side. More importantly, on the right-hand side, These are deliverables from Innovest. I get a little bit of background there. Could you guys hear me okay? Okay. So on the right-hand side, more importantly, we're going to be deliverables on the Innovest side. So if you look at the very, very bottom right-hand side, when we do the Q2 review, we're going to have an updated fee review, and then we'll also go through the annual share class review. So on page 9, this is just the fee review. Again, this will be updated when we do the next quarter's meeting, but I'll just gloss over this. The fee review is compared against 27 other similarly sized plans. If you take a look at that top horizontal green line, investment record keeping and administrative costs, the average in the benchmark for the expenses is 55 basis points, and for the city, we're at 35. And we always want to be underneath that benchmark. Now, line item on how we get to that 35, if you go down to the next gray horizontal line, gross investment management fees, these are weighted average expenses. So the weighted average expense for all the investment managers is 30 basis points. The next gray horizontal line is going to be the Empower record keeping fee. That's the equivalent of 6 basis points. There's a little bit of revenue sharing, $21,000, that gets credited back to all participants, and that's how you get to that 35 basis points. Now, when you start looking at other additional fees, Innovest's fee there, $37,500, that's the equivalent of 1 basis point. And then as you go down to the very bottom, you'll see some of the ancillary charges, managed account fees for the participants that choose that option, loans, self-directed brokerage, and you've got ancillary fees there. So this is a great piece because, you know, one of your fiduciary responsibilities is to know what are your providers generating in revenue, and this piece puts that on autopilot. Again, it will be updated next quarter. Any questions before I move on? So if we can go to, I'll finish up here on page 11. And I'll just focus on the 457 plan. So at the end of the year, plan assets were at $300 million. At the end of the first quarter, assets were at $313 million. The largest holdings, almost 28% of plan assets, are in large cap equity. Putnam, stable value, holds 23% of your assets. And then your American Funds Target Date Suites holds just over 16% of plan assets. And I won't go through the 401A or the executive 401A, leave that for all of you to look at. Before I turn things over to Gordon to talk about the markets, any questions from the committee? Okay. Over to you, Gordon. Hey, Gord, we don't, you're on mute, Gord.
Sorry about that. Gord.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
Great. Well, I'll step here in and give a sort of a broad overview of the markets before we get sort of specific on a little bit of a sort of a forward type look around the economy and what the markets are looking at. Again, a variety of different market indexes on this particular page. The left-hand side, the indexes are equity markets. So really starting with U.S. large cap stocks on the far left-hand side, and then really working over to those emerging market stocks, places like Brazil, India, China, and then the bond markets as we work a little bit further to the right. And the blue columns are a one-year look back, so essentially the last 12 months ending March 31st of 2024. And then the yellow bars are the one-quarter numbers, so the first quarter of this particular year. And from an equity standpoint, markets were strong. That 10.6 under the U.S. large cap column was actually the 15th best first quarter in market history here in the U.S. So I'm quite strong on that particular front. And really the markets were strong because of the optimism around the Fed possibly decreasing that Fed funds rate over the course of 2024. Clearly, as we've reached April, that optimism had faded. And many of those that like to forecast the changes in that Fed funds rate sort of pulled all changes off the table for 2024, and we're even forecasting in some cases increases in that Fed funds rate. Things have certainly changed since then, and I'll give you a little bit of a more current update. But that's where the strength in the equity markets came from over the course of that first quarter. Again, bond markets have been challenging for an extended period of time. I'll touch on that roughly in depth on one of our particular pages with that core fixed income index down 0.8%. And ultimately, we saw those yields on those bonds increase, demand changes in some cases, and just the idea that those interest rates were going to stay higher for longer, push that yield higher, and with that higher yield, lower prices, ultimately not enough to overcome what's a pretty high yield at this particular point. You know, as we sort of fast forward to the end of last week, the equity markets have given up some of what's on this particular page. You take a look at that U.S. large cap stock column, what was up 10.6% through the first quarter, now up about 8% through this past Friday. Small company stocks up 5.2 at the end of the quarter, now up about 4.25. Developed international stocks up 5.8. Now up about 4.5, and those the emerging market economy stocks were up 2.4, now up about 2. Again, we've seen a change in those yields, and bond market unfortunately pushed even a little bit lower of recent through the end of last week, down about 2%. So really sort of a challenging market through April, and then a pretty good rebound in May is put us where we are so far. And as far as really sort of an economic update looking at, markets continue to really sort of watch the bottom two left-hand pieces, the inflation that's occurring in the U.S. economy and the interest rates, and really watching that inflation because that's what the Fed is watching at this point in time to give them a little bit of a trigger and a level of comfort that inflation is low enough that they can consider lowering interest rates a little bit. Sort of taking items top left through the bottom of the page, the economy continues to be in pretty good shape. You know, we saw big GDP growth at the end of last year. You know, in the third quarter, economy grew at a rate of 4.9%, in the fourth quarter, 3.4%. Numbers are a little bit lower at this point in time. We saw an advance estimate of the first quarter GDP growth come in at 1.6%. So not as strong, but still on the growth side, which is something that that we're all watching. Labor market, again, had been pretty strong in March. You can see second bullet point here. March. Of note, that report came out a little bit slower for April. We added about 175,000 jobs in April, and that unemployment rate, noted it being at 3.8% in the top bullet point, ticked up to 3.9. So a little bit of signs of slowing within the labor market, really sort of the markets took that as being a bit of a good sign. Really, ultimately, they'd like to see less economic strength in the market so that they can think about lowering those interest rates. And again, we've seen some recent news sort of within the economy and that labor market that could point that direction, and that's really what created a pretty recent market rally. Okay, inflation numbers, bottom left. You know, the Fed watches what's called the personal consumption expenditures index pretty closely. Its most recent number was 2.8. So again, they're trying to target that inflation number of really being right at 2%. So we're not there. It's much better than it has been, and certainly much better than those numbers from summer of last year, which were double digit. But some sticky parts in inflation. have been shelter. Obviously, housing prices, expensive across the country, continue to keep that portion of inflation pretty high. And then services, things like transportation and vacation-type items, travel, continue to be sticky parts of inflation and showing that the Fed still has some work to do. Again, March report from the Fed held that target rate at 5.25 to 5.5. May meeting, the Fed came out with that same target, so no change within the Fed funds rate out of that that particular meeting. Though with this more recent, slightly softer news about the economy, those that create probabilities of Fed funds rate hike sometime before September ticked up. You know, prior to this news that, that just came out, the probability of a rate decline prior to this, or probably through the September meeting, was about 50%. After this softer economic news, again, people thinking that the Fed may be able to march that, that rate down sometime in an upcoming meeting, either this summer or early next fall, that probability ticked up to about close to about 70%. Again, those two pieces between the inflation reports and the interest rates out from the Fed is really what the markets are watching in, at this point in time and driving some really pretty good volatility. I think with that, I sort of want to jump right in to sort of talk about the bond market a little bit and again, what may be a better environment for it on a go-forward basis. You know, to really sort of set that up, we have to think about the recent history a little bit. And this page really highlights how tough a market it's been and an important market for those that need to have a conservative portfolio in their defined contribution plan. You know, we really entered a bear market or a decline in the bond market in July of 2020. So this has been the longest bear market by far as we take a look at the numbers on this particular left-hand chart. So 44 months, a big drawdown of more than 17%. You can compare that to the numbers below. Anything that's occurred before when it's come to that, that drawdown. So bond market really challenged. I mean, again, negative so far this year. But we think as yields are higher, that softer economic news on a go-forward basis, pointing that the Fed might at some point a little bit later this year start to drop those interest rates just a little bit, can possibly point toward a little bit better future for the for that bond market, and hopefully so. Again, an important piece of many of those accounts. I think with that, I'll talk a little bit about sort of our ode to being long-term investors within retirement plans and not trying to guess where the markets will go. You know, in many cases in our reports, we'll show that with just talking about missing it. If you miss four or five of the biggest days over the course of a year by not being an investor in your account, you miss much of the market return for that particular year. This is a little bit of a different look at it. It talks about investing on any day during the particular time frame that we show at the bottom of this particular chart versus at investing at the new high that may have occurred during that time frame. And what we see is it doesn't really matter if you invest in the high in the markets. You get actually a better return investing at the high of the markets than you do investing on any day during the course of the year. Really just showing that the dollar cost averaging, getting invested in plans and staying invested is a very important part of the plan structure. So, you know, we don't want to see participants getting in and out of the market. That's why things like the target date funds are great on that particular front and in keeping them invested. So it's a little bit of a complex chart, but again, interesting showing it's important just to get in the market and stay in the market. And then really a sort of a look back at markets in this particular case. Again, we heat map here, so green is good, dark green is even better, and really we see a lot of dark green on this chart, really only a little bit of pink or negative numbers in that three-year number, and that's reflective of the really tough markets we had in 2022. So we certainly still remember 22 well. But some strong markets of late have almost wiped it off this particular page. The real themes of the market that we've seen over the course of really the last five and at this point even 10 years continued over the course of the more current timeframes. You know, if you look at that very top left-hand chart, the first quarter of 2024, and you look at that domestic equity chart, you'll still see that the continued dominance of the performance of the large growth stocks that are out there. So the Amazons, the Apples, the Microsofts, some of the newer entrants in that particular market, the NVIDIAs, really driving a lot of the performance of the market. You can compare that to the small value stocks that up just 2.9% there. Large growth stocks up more than 10% different compared to those small value peers. So that's a pretty consistent theme on this particular page. It doesn't play through for that three-year number as during 2022, those growth stocks had a tough time. But you look at almost any other piece of the chart and you'll see, at least in the U.S., that's the case. Actually, if you look at international stocks, not quite the case. Actually, value stocks have been better performers over the long run compared to those growth stocks on an international basis, and that has impacted some of the international managers' approaches and performance. And then really just a look at the sectors of our economy that have done well in the markets so over the course of the quarter and over the course of the one-year time frame. As we think about those large growth, rapidly growing companies, they tend to fall in just a few of those sectors. Those tend to be clearly information technology, consumer discretionary stocks, and then also communication services. And those have been the sectors that have dominated over that one-year time frame. You can see communication services, which is where Meta falls as an individual stock, up 49%. And again, information technology, where many of those large, rapidly growing companies fall, up 46%. And so not unexpected down that particular part of the chart. Top chart, which is the one quarter, again, communication services, the best place to be. But energy, with an increase of oil prices over the course of the quarter, second place, but then you sort of get back to that information technology sector and its dominance over the course of the quarter. So, again, highly impactful to some of the managers and the way they invest is both the individual performance of some of those large growing companies as well as that sector performance. With that, I'll get into the card and probably what we think is the key page when we think about the investments within the plan. And as a reminder, we score all the investments within the plan on a green, yellow, and red basis on that criteria across the top of the page. So really the strength of the organization, including any material litigation as well as mergers and acquisitions, go into that particular piece. The people, this is an assessment of the people that are actually managing your money in these funds, their tenure, their experience, their education, the resources that they have within this particular company to effectively manage that portfolio and the securities that go into that portfolio. The process and philosophy, which is the way that they pick those securities to go in the fund, is it well articulated? Is it very clear? A place where we do a lot of work ensuring that we think it's a repeatable process so they can provide you consistency of performance over a long period of time. That style consistency is whether they change that process or philosophy or process and try and chase the markets to some extent. If they've got a sound philosophy and process, we like to see it really. Asset-based is really more of a quantitative type approach, and that's really what sort of the next three columns are. Asset-based funds can simply get too big. They become difficult to invest in that particular approach, maybe owning too much of a company, and when they want to move either further into that stock or out of that stock, that can create challenges. Or maybe not being able to buy the type of companies because they just have too many in assets. On the flip side, fund can also get too small, ultimately creating a lack of resources because these are paid by asset base. So smaller asset base means smaller revenue coming into the firm and maybe a stretch on some resources. Performance, again, a quantitative measure. We're very specifically looking at 3 and 5 year numbers here. We want them to be performing better than their peers, and we want them to be performing better than those numbers. But that focus is really on those 3 and 5 year numbers. expenses. Again, key because every dollar that goes to these money managers is a dollar that's not in somebody's account. And so we really want these managers to be below the median expense of a similarly managed fund. And those numbers are really in that table on the far right-hand side. The expense ratio is the expense of the fund. The median expense ratio is the expense ratio of the 50th ranked or median manager that's managing in a money in a similar fashion. And then that ratio of expense to median, again, great to see that everything less than 100 in this particular case. So that's really key to us. All your managers are less than that median manager out there. And then overall is a summary of the manager, or excuse me, the analyst inside Innovest that watches that particular fund family. They're a really culmination of all those pieces of information and that criteria off to the left. And again, all green in this particular case, and only a few minor concerns. I'll touch on each of those. T. Rowe Price Growth Stock Fund, we have talked about quite a bit. Still a performance concern, and even a little bit of underperformance in the more recent timeframes. But as we talked about, we think T. Rowe Price, a very strong firm, really sort of specializes in that growth approach. We think a good team that manages this particular fund, and good resources, some great analyst team that creates those ideas for securities to get by to get into the portfolio. Challenges in this particular case, in part, is that the concentration in growth stocks. In the most recent time frame, really probably four companies produced the most performance within that particular market, and just a little bit of misallocation among some of those very top, very large growth companies can cause some issues with performance. And I'll touch on that on the next page, because that has occurred, what occurred with the T. Rowe Price Growth Stock Fund. J.P. Morgan Mid-Cap Growth Fund, a little bit of a newer entrant into the plan. We brought that in a little bit earlier this year. Minor concern for some changes within the people. They did have a longer-term manager retire from this particular fund. But a great growth team at J.P. Morgan. Really some strong individuals within the portfolio manager ranks, as well as a good analyst team that creates those ideas. Ultimately, we saw a woman named Felice Agronoff take over as the lead portfolio manager in this particular case. She has great experience with J.P. Morgan, has been a portfolio manager on a variety of different growth funds for them. At the time that she moved into the lead portfolio management responsibility for this fund, she didn't really come off those other funds, and so really concentrating on this particular mid-cap growth fund at this particular point in time. And what we'll see is that performance for them has been really consistent over a period of time, and we think they continue to be under their stride under her management. And an Invesco Developing Markets Fund, investing in those emerging markets, Brazil, India, China, performance concern in this particular case. And again, similar thinking sort of around T. Rowe Price. This is a star manager in this particular case, a lead manager that has led this fund for many, many years, highly talented, very, very well respected in the industry. Invesco, firm with lots of resources and analysts really across the globe, to be able to invest in research in those emerging market stocks. We would say, again, one that we would like to be patient on, despite some recent underperformance for them, and we think a little bit understandable, given that the way they invest weight. Moving on to table returns, I'm not going to spend too much time getting into all of the performance, but certainly, I want to touch on those that are on the scorecard, but it also touch on some of those that have had some great performance. You've got some really strong performers as well as a couple underperformers. And unfortunately, one of those underperformers is right up top, that T. Rowe Price Growth Stock Fund. As noted, not where it needs to be on that 3 and 5 year number. Of note, it did have a really strong last 12 months. If you take a look at that 1 year number, sort of third column in, see the fund up 40.49% over the course of that 12 months, landed in the 47th percentile, so better than that median peer, and very solid performance for the quarter. Pretty good performance, just a little bit behind the index, just a little bit behind that median manager. A little bit of an overweight towards some healthcare stocks that were not the best place to be in this particular quarter, Eli Lilly and United Healthcare. pulled them down a little bit in more current quarter. They're also overweight Alphabet. Alphabet, one of those very large, rapidly growing companies that didn't have a really good quarter, being overweight there hurt them a little bit. But again, we think a lot of the team here, and again, are preaching patience in that particular case. Victory Sycamore, just below that, one of your really outstanding funds. You can see 3-5 year numbers beyond, really, really strong and a very strong quarter. You know, they had some strategic calls within the technology sector, not part of a big part of that value index, but some very good calls on individual stock selection in that technology sector created some really strong performance for the year and just continued to improve that long-term performance for them. I've noted JP Morgan is one of those other funds on the scorecard with a minor concern for that portfolio management team. Again, we would say on stride here, really strong quarter for them, up 10.26%, ranking in the 29th percentile, a very big year, up 26.21%, and in the 23rd percentile. And again, very good long-term numbers, 5, 7, and 10-year numbers in the top 10%. Portfolio management team changes, but that may actually occur fairly soon. With that, I will hit, again, following page, some very strong performance from your developed international markets, your cosplay, and then great long-term performance from those 3 years out, sort of a highlight in that particular area. But your other actively managed international fund, Fidelity Diversified International, strong performance in the long run from them, so some good performance there. But as noted, Invesco developing markets continues to be a little bit challenged. Up a couple percent, not far off that index that was up 2.3 compared to Invesco's 2.1. But again, not where we'd like to see them. Here it really is a matter of their style. This is a fund that likes to invest in high quality growing companies. And so they tend to tilt a little bit toward that growth market. As I noted, value part of the market has really been more in favor in international emerging markets. That's what's caused them to lag over those longer-term time frames. So, again, we think in a little bit of a normalized market where growth is a bigger uptake of the upside of the market, this fund can perform really well. And, again, think a lot of that long-term manager in this particular case. Of note, not much return at the bottom of the page as we shift into fixed income. I'm sort of starting to look at the modest returns even going out over those 7 and 10-year time frames, but PIMCO doing a great job. You know, these numbers in parentheses, really key to us. I'm ranking exceptionally well against their peers. Good quarter, despite it being a negative quarter, up 0.02%, while its index was up, or excuse me, was down 0.8. Median manager down 8, so in the 17th percentile and very consistent. Cumulative performance for PIMCO. Ultimately found some yield within a little bit less than investment grade corporate bonds in this particular case that were very added to the performance over the course of the quarter. And then as Paul noted, the Putnam Stable Value Fund as a standalone fund, a big part of the plan at this point as far as assets. Again, not a big return from this particular fund over the long run, but doing a nice job compared to their peers and getting a good portion of return compared to their peers. Up 3.76% over the course of the one-year time frame, ranking in the 8th percentile. So very additive to the portfolio over an extended period of time and good performance there. And we'll really close with those American funds and continued consistent performance from them. You know, over the course of the year, not the top of the charts, as we'll see over the long run, but we look at those funds, generally the top 40%. And it's tough to look at sort of all these target date funds together, but that's really the approach that I take. If you look at the 2010 fund, the version of the target date funds, and you look at those numbers in parentheses, you can see the last quarter, the one-year number, in the 27th and the 34th percentile, and then sort of you sort of drop to the bottom of the page. 2040 funds, and again, getting a little bit more aggressive, meant for those that are a little bit further out from retirements at the top of the page. Still very good performance, up 7.21% and 21% over the course of the year, ranking in the 24th and 14th percentile. But then what's even more outstanding for these funds is if you really shift and look at those time frames for the 3, 5, 7, and 10-year time frames across the board from the top of the page to the bottom, many of those numbers in the top 10%. So American funds sort of shooting the lights out again across all those cumulative time frames, one of the top 10% of those target date funds across all those cumulative time frames. So great performance from them and continued pretty good performance over the course of the quarter. With that, I'm happy to take questions on any of what I covered. If not, I'll return back to Mr. Chair.
Oh. Thank you, Gordon. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Gordon.
Always great.
Thank you, Paul. Always great. Gives us a nice snapshot of the nice. I'm hearing reverb. You good? Okay. Okay, any board members, any questions, commentary?
Thanks, Gordon. That was a lot of information, but really, really good presentation. Thank you.
Okay, on to the last item. Art has included a couple of articles for us to read. I have to admit I've not read them yet, so I don't have commentary on those. Quick question on, or more directed towards Art. NAG is coming up right after our next board meeting, and since it's in Phoenix this year, the opportunity is there, and you know, between the proximity and new board members and such, just maybe we might want to give consideration to people's participation in that conference. I believe it's September, mid-September, early October.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would encourage the board members who have not attended a national NAGDA conference to definitely go ahead and do it. I know Rolf went last year. I believe, Dennis, that you may have gone to one. I know I've been to one in New Orleans. There are a wealth of information. There's a lot of people, a lot of boards, a lot of plan sponsors, a lot of plan administrators. The topics, the breakout topics are generally well-informed. Matter of fact, I know Gordon has, I saw Gordon speak at the one I went to. So I'd encourage there is the opportunity to use our administrative allowance account to go ahead and travel. So yeah, anybody who wants to do that, let's make plans through my office, to go ahead and get registered and get all of the, rooms and travel and things authorized, because that will take a little bit of time. So I would encourage that. Paul, I don't have the exact dates, but I'm sure Paul, he's a member of NAGDA.
So NAGDA will begin Sunday. Sunday, September 16th, and will commence, around noon on Wednesday, September 18th. It's at the Sheridan downtown, Innovest. So the opening reception is on Sunday the 15th at like 6 o'clock. Innovest hosts a dinner that's going to be two blocks away. So anybody that goes, make sure you show up to our dinner. And registration's already open.
Okay, thanks for that. Any other board member commentary? If not, I will take a motion for us to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. So we've got a motion to adjourn. Art's good. Rolf, good?
Yep.
Jason?
Good.
Aaron?
Hi.
Okay. And Dennis, aye. Everybody, thank you for your time. It's great to be back.
Great. Take care, everybody. Have a good
rest. Good to see you, Dennis.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you. Thanks for the information.
Bye. Good to see everybody.